You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. Today, my guest is Rebecca Hirota. She is a wonderful actress who has been in my life since we were thrown together as roommates one summer while we were at the Guthrie Theater. We're currently in a show together, which is so much fun, and I'm very happy to be in the presence of her positive energy every day and to have her share her perspective here on the podcast. I hope you enjoy the 15th episode of The Compass. I'm just going to dive in. What is the dark side for you as an artist, and how do you try to keep away from it?
I was thinking about this question because I know this is how you start. And I think it's about doubt and comparison. And that is in the process and outside of the process. Because there's this thing that you talked about with Phil about the imposter syndrome, which you definitely get when you're lucky enough to be working on something. And I always have it where all of a sudden I'm like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. And I start doubting everything that's doing. And, you know, and honestly, the best of times it works out and things come together and it feels really, really great. But sometimes it never goes away. Mm. And in that doubt, I start looking around at the people who are also in the room and go, oh my God, well, they know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. They're doing such great work. But I realize that everybody everywhere is probably thinking the same thing. And this magical thing that we all think that we have, that someone else has figured out, they haven't. We are just all sitting there sitting the same thing and faking the same fake. But it's not just comparison within the project. It's also outside as well. Because when you are going through a time in between work, I have a group of friends who I grew up with, a bunch of girlfriends who I went to school with, and we're still very close. And when we all hit 30, they started getting married, which was late, but still hitting the usual marks. And we all went to, and it's interesting because we've all followed a similar trajectory in a lot of ways. We went to school, we all graduated from grad school, like went to grad school or law school or medical school and then left around the same time. I think there was maybe four of us in the same year in 2009 who were coming out of school. And when I'm going through really bad times in between work, I stop and make that horrible thing of looking at their lives and like all these different things that they're hitting and milestones and being able to do, which make me realize or feel like I'm not a real adult. Because they have, you know, they've, besides being married, they also are buying houses and having children. And I am still, you know, trying to make ends meet from month to month and week to week and day to day. And that's the real dark side for me is just doubt about myself, both in and out of the process and the choices that I've made, and also and the comparison of both into the people who are around me who are doing the thing and also the people who are my peers who are living the life. But what I try to think about in terms of not going there is that it's all about ideas about where you should be, and that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
That's hard to realize, though, when you have a whole culture telling you.
It
that,
is.
Oh, this is the path.
It is. And I think the only reason why I've recently been able to go beyond that is I went through something about 2 years ago where I guess it started 3 years ago, where I had a really good time in my life where I met someone and we fell in love and I thought we were going to get married. And at the same time, I was doing this show, and it was like one of my favorite things that I've ever done artistically. And then that person and like the people from the show and everything kind of just coalesced into a great little friends group that came out of that became my family. And this was all going really well. And then a year later, it all fell to shit. It was in a point which was actually one of the better points in my career. Like, I had gotten a pretty, I was a lead in a show at the Denver Center, which is a pretty good theater. And I came back and, I was getting a lot of auditions. Like, my agent at the time was sending me out for a lot, and I just didn't care because, things were falling apart in my relationship and everything was going kind of dark, and I was questioning everything, and I was, and where I was in life, because I was 31. And then all of a sudden it seemed like, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, because I'm getting all these auditions, but I still feel like I'm in the same place, because I was getting, going in for a lot of TV, but it was also nameless, multiracial secretary. And I was like, why did I go to grad school to come in and do, and be in these same places where I would see, you know, friends of mine who went to ACT and Juilliard at these same things, and we're like, one of them is multi-ethnic Hispanic and the other one is half Black, and we're all doing the same thing, to be walking into a room to have
token,
to then
have a person of color,
yes, to then have a casting director say, I don't believe you, to my line of, I'm sir, do you have an appointment? He's like, I don't believe you. And I go, what, how do you want me to say that? And I, you know, I was questioning everything, and it was in this really dark time. And I was looking at all the people around me, and I started going crazy. And I was like, maybe I should be a lawyer and just make all the money. And all my friends who were lawyers were like, don't do it. Don't do it. It steals your soul. And then in this last year, I spent a lot of time doing a lot of soul searching. And I met someone new. It's actually been through him and life that I begin to realize that it doesn't have to look the way that you thought it was supposed to look. And even for the people who follow the typical path, it doesn't look that way for them. Because for him, he travels the world. He just spent 4 months in Antarctica because he could. And then because of him being in Antarctica, we went and went away to New Zealand for a month and went all throughout the South and the North Island. And then he went on to Australia and Cambodia, and I came back and started the show. And, you know, like 2 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to leave New York because I would have been afraid I'd miss an audition, or, or because I, was afraid of leaving work. And if you say yes to things, you don't know, like, life may not be the prototypical of what you thought it was, but my friends who are married and have children, when I told them what I was doing, they were like, oh my God, I'm so jealous. I'm just stuck at home with the baby. And the baby is beautiful and wonderful, and I love the baby. But at the same time, I'm not jumping off a bridge in Queenstown.
The grass is always greener on the other side.
Yeah. So I guess that's what it is to stop comparing and just try to enjoy the moment that you're in, and that life can be an adventure no matter what you're doing, as long as you feel like it's what you're supposed to be doing. And these are things I would like to believe.
That you remind yourself of often.
Yes. Yes. That's what we try to believe. Yeah.
That's interesting that you go first to comparing yourself with friends who aren't in the business. I guess I do that too, but I feel like I usually, when I'm going to the dark side, go first to comparing myself with people who are in the business.
Yeah. It depends on the day and the year. I as you will know, I am now in my 30s, and they're turned a corner when clocks started ticking internally, and it didn't just become about the career, because I think for the first 3 years out of grad school, I was looking a lot around at the people who were my peers and the ones who were racing forward and the ones that are falling behind and the ones who just gave up. And then when I crossed into my 30s, it started going a little bit more global than just the myopic about being in the business, because There's going forward and there's back. There's moments where I realize that I make these compromises with myself, and I know that I always am going to need to create things, but I think I kind of am okay with doing it with friends, with working with companies, with even like doing community theater, like at home. I'm from Hawaii, And a lot of, there's a few people who were on Broadway in a few shows and were in New York for a number of years and then moved back home to procreate, as so many people do. And now are just happy being, making local community theater the best theater that anybody has ever seen because it's populated by a bunch of former Broadway actors. Mm. You know, my brother-in-law, who went to University of Michigan, who's extremely talented. You know, I think he was in the same class as Matthew Morrison. Oh. And all of his peers, and Celia Bulger Keenan, I think her name is.
Keenan Bulger.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And like all of his classmates are now, you know, they're everywhere, but he chose to, and he, right after getting out of school, got like a national tour as Tony. And still has one of the best tenor voices I've ever heard, but it wasn't what he wanted. He didn't like the business. He didn't like New York. So he wanted to settle down, and he and my sister now have three beautiful children. And he thinks about going and doing for fun, you know, community theater in Hawaii. So that's my long-winded story of why I stopped comparing, because you make this compromise with yourself that it's okay to just have it in your life. And that's okay for that moment. And then you start worrying about other things.
That's interesting that you have that example right in your family.
Yeah, he and my sister.
Yeah.
They met doing Miss Saigon when she was his dirty, dirty little whore.
I hope she listens to this.
I hope so, too, and she knows she was. She looked.
So your family has a bunch of artists in it, right?
Yes.
Or artistic members of your family.
Yes.
What has that been like for you? Were you a performer when you were a kid?
Yes.
It started early?
It began that early, this affliction, and it's never let go of me since. My mom was a ballet dancer, because in the South in the 50s, there wasn't nobody was really pushing her, and she was very smart. Still is very smart. Mom, you're very smart. She skipped a grade and still graduated at 16.
Oh my goodness.
But she went to dance because in the 50s in Louisiana, the only thing they saw smart girls doing was either being a teacher or a librarian. And she wanted to do more. She wanted to go to college, and she ended up going and getting into dance and going to the National Ballet School, because it was the only place where people pushed her to do more. You know, like in school, she got bored because they didn't really push her, because no one expected anything of women scholastically, because there was no jobs for them. But she danced because it was challenging and people wanted her to do better. That being said, the hard part about in my family is that it is populated with artists, and they are very supportive of me. But they also are all people who did art and then gave it up. So right.
And chose a different path at some point.
Yeah. So it's been an interesting journey in that regard, because they were always support me. They're incredibly supportive. But they all left, and I think they never say it, but I think they're worried that about me and what I'm doing. And that's cool, because I'm worried about me and what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea. But that's why we're here.
Right. What about your dad?
My dad is an architect. And so he is the practical side of art. I always loved architecture because it's kind of, I think, where the world of regular people and artists meet, because it's a practical application of an artistic eye. And so he is an architect, but he's also always dabbled in photography on his own. We call him the paparazzi. My nephews and my niece call him Papa. So my mom is Nana and he's Papa. And we call him the paparazzi because he follows us around with a camera. And they, you know, he loves music. He and I, as my graduation present from high school, took father-daughter drum lessons together.
Oh,
and he
goodness.
Was much better than I was.
That's adorable.
But so they're just, you know, I have an artsy fartsy family, but they do normal things now. Like my brother-in-law, who's such a beautiful voice, He's a sommelier. And my sister, who was on, she was on One Life to Live for half a year. Yeah. She was a recurring character. She was the bulimic hyperachiever who then got hit by a who got murdered by one of the actresses, not in real life, on the show.
Obviously,
yeah, yes. Yeah, because she's very much alive. Sorry, sister. And now she's a nurse, so
wow.
I don't know. I know that this is something that you have thought about, and I've thought about too, is the when the dark days are coming and when you kind of begin to want more stability and like more, and especially like financial, and it would be nice to not have money like always on the mind. It's
stressful.
Yeah, but the hardest thing is I have been racking my mind now for these 2 years since things happened, like the disaster struck, to try and figure out something else I could do and what I would do, and I can't, and that's the hardest part.
Yeah,
it's not.
If it was obvious,
then I would
make it a lot easier.
Or even, and I'm also trying to figure out, like, even just something else I could do as a day job that would be slightly more lucrative. And but it's really incredibly hard because I don't have a lot of these skills that would make it lucrative, like.
Computer programming.
Exactly. That was exactly what I was going to say. I feel like Zoolander. I'm like, the files are in the computer. And no, I have no idea. It's this magical box that does things. But I don't know. And that's the hard part is I don't want to, if I did leave, I would want to do something else that I would pursue as a career. And although being an executive assistant or something and having that stability does sound really, really appealing, it's not enough right now to do the crossover. It might be if I if I was married and had kids and I was doing it just to support them, but since it's me still in the world and I have the luxury of not having to like contemplate too much besides making sure that I'm not gonna end up being a financial burden on my own family, I have all the options in the world, and that means I have no idea.
Can you tell me a little bit about what you're doing for your day job now?
Right now, I'm lucky enough to have a day job that is pretty wonderful. I work for a wellness company, and I do personal training and some consulting and a little bit nutrition, sometimes yoga. And I work with people who are interested in alternative healthcare because it's an office that does massage and chiropractic and nutrition and are looking to take care of your bodies in the moment to prevent things happening in the future, because that's a lot of what it is take care of it now, and then you don't have to worry about having a heart attack later, because a lot of the diseases that are prevalent in America are completely avoidable just by making lifestyle changes for the most part. Not easy, but avoidable. And it's very rewarding work, because I've had a number of patients who've come in who've been in a lot of pain, and I've had a couple of people I've worked with who have been in their 70s, and I had one guy who came, I think he came from Groupon or something, and was just bought a couple of sessions, and we got him from not being able to get off the ground and barely able to stand up, to being able to do push-ups and planking for like 3 minutes. And it took time and all of my knowledge resources.
Wow.
But it can be extremely rewarding. And I should say the reason why I have this job is actually because of you.
I think this is such a funny connection.
I'm gonna tell a story and I'll make it as brief as possible. But I needed a gym membership after I graduated from grad school, and I was talking to you, and you said, "Oh, I'm doing outreach at Equinox," and I said, "Cool." And I walked in and I asked if I could do outreach, and the guy at the front desk said, "You should fill out an application." So I said, "Okay, whatever." So I get a call on the telephone. And the person says, "Hi, is this Rebecca?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Is this Rebecca Hirota, Jessica Hirota's sister?" And I said, "Yeah." And it turns out...
Oh, I forgot about this part.
Yeah, it turns out it was a woman named Stacy. She was the assistant general manager at Equinox, and she was the older sister and the only sister I hadn't met from a family that I had grown up doing theater with in Hawaii. And I was very good friends with her younger sister, Candace, and her father was the musical director of one of the first major musicals I did as a kid. And I'd met her like her entire family, her younger sister and her older sister, who both lived in Hawaii. Both her parents, I'd worked with them for years. I had met her like aunts and uncles. I had slept in her house, but I'd never met her because by the time I met her family, she had already moved to New York to pursue dancing. But she knew my older sister from growing up doing dance in Hawaii. So she pulled me in and I started working at Equinox as first front desk and then as a trainer. And then she left and went to this wellness company, and then she pulled me in there as well.
Oh my goodness.
So the reason why I do what I do now and have this weird skill set is because of you.
Because I went on Craigslist and was so cheap that I was willing to pass out flyers 3 hours a week to get a free gym membership.
Yeah, but it's really great.
It's a really nice gym,
guys. It is a really nice gym.
I only did it for like, I don't know how long. Maybe I made it a year, but it was soul crushing.
It was incredibly
soul crushing. Passing out flyers on the street in New York is desperate.
You have to.
I will say sometimes I went to Starbucks and threw them out and sat there for a while and then came back. But shh, don't tell anybody.
Oh my God, that's brilliant.
Don't tell Equinox.
Do you have to show them that you had gotten rid of all of your flyers?
I think you just had to go out for a certain amount of time.
Oh my God, that's brilliant. Yeah. That's brilliant.
But it was, you know, broke right out of grad school. I had a membership to a really nice gym.
It was a really nice gym.
And there you are now at that wellness center. And she still works there too?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
They take good care of us.
Funny place.
I know.
It's really funny. I mean, what I love about what you do is you are a dancer and a mover and like such a physical person and a physical actor. I'm sure as frustrating as it is to, you know, do any job that isn't what you want to be doing for money. Do you find some kind of outlet in being so physical, like having that built into your life in a way that you don't have to think about it too much?
That is in the better moments. Yes. Which is to say, yes, it's great for a couple of reasons. It's great for a multitude of reasons. One, it's really nice to have a day job that helps people and feels like you're actually doing something positive. It's great because a big part about our profession is, for better or for worse, about your physicality.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I are both physical actors as well. And so it helps just having that as a resource and also having that knowledge, because now I know how to properly take care of myself and I have the ability to do so. It also is great in an odd way because I have a lot of clients from all over the place, and it's just so rewarding as an artist and as a human being to interact with so many different types of people, and training can get intimate. I've had a lot of people break down and a lot of people cry,
sure.
And like things work out, but
kind of like a hairdresser or something where you're kind of half therapist.
Oh God.
Half trainer.
I had when I was doing more yoga, and this is why I had to stop. I had people who, you know, a lot of it is like, you can't really go into a session, particularly when it's one-on-one, if you're bringing a lot of your stuff in. So sometimes I'd sit and we would do like, I'm air quoting, guided meditations, which would basically be us talking and like trying to work through what was going on. And I had to eventually stop doing yoga because I had a practice member come in who just laid down on the yoga mat and then started talking about his father. And I was like, okay, this is
becoming something else.
Yes. But the nice thing about it is that we worked with Trader Joe's for a little while. So I had a lot of like young artists and comedians and actors and dancers.
That's cool.
But we also work with corporate companies as well. So I have a lot of Harvard business grad and like, you know, some people who are both. Like I have one client who is one of four boys, and the mother is a music teacher and the father is a scientist. And the two older boys are both have PhDs. And he's working as a consultant with his PhD, but the two younger brothers are both actors.
Hmm.
And the second to youngest brother is also a musician who writes music books with the mother. So it's been great just talking to so many people and like getting so many different perspectives, and yeah, it's really informative. So that's really helpful. And I don't have to work in restaurants, which kills my soul.
So since we're right after we're recording this, we're going to do a show together.
Oh, my God.
I know I've been finding it so rewarding just to go to a play every night. It's like, oh, this is how I want my life to be structured, that the whole day is building up to this thing. Mm-hmm. And then you get to ride this wave with what I love about the Towers, is just this great ensemble of people, and it never really stops. You just keep going and going and going, and then the play's over. It just happens. But I know a lot of the shows you and I have both worked on in New York are these things where you're working with your peers, mm-hmm. which is great. A lot of like wonderful artists that you respect, but mm-hmm. it's these Actors Equity showcase codes where it's short.
Right.
You know, what is it? Like 16 performances or something like that, that you're allowed under the showcase code.
Yeah.
How do you deal with going through those like ups and downs of like, oh my God, I get to do what I want to do for the next 2.5 weeks and then it's over?
Badly.
Or what? I mean, right now we're still pretty towards the beginning, so yeah. I know I'm on such a high about it right now.
But. Yeah. I mean, God. I think you enjoy it while you're in it. And the answer is badly. I deal with it badly because there's always that lull after you're done where you're creatively not being satiated. And then all of a sudden, one day you're being cranky to your partner and you go, oh, no, it's not about that. I'm just not having any other outlet for all of my stuff. So now it's coming out on you right now. So sorry, honey.
Have you found any like patterns in the way you deal with that slope downward after coming out of a show?
The answer is badly. I have nothing profound to say about that. I slope out. In my better moments, I look forward to the next thing. Mm-hmm. And there's always a little bit of relief because these projects that we do, the showcase codes, are out of love. And we are still working our regular day jobs when we do it. So mm-hmm. there's a little bit of a couple of days where you are thankful afterwards because you can actually only work one full-time job as opposed to two. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you get sad because the process is over. And even if it's not an ideal process or even a show that you love, at least you're getting to do the thing that really fulfills you and really feeds a part of your soul. And then I think at the best moment, you do what you're doing, which is right now, which is finding your other creative outlets and start making plans for the next thing.
I was going to ask if you've been doing much like choreography or stuff on other creative outlets on the side when you're not acting.
I get asked to do things. I normally only work when people ask me specifically to do it for a show, and it's usually the show that I'm working on because it's not an outlet that I've pursued in and of myself, and I very much enjoy it, but I'm not looking to choreograph so much. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things that I admire most about other artists is diversifying, and I think it's very necessary in this world in which sometimes people in LA ask you how many Twitter followers you have before you even read your sides.
I know that's the advice, and it's something that I'm interested in when I've been learning from all of my peers during this podcast, but it's not easy. It's not easy for me. And sometimes you're like, I trained to be an actor and I want to be an actor.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to pursue.
Yeah.
So it's not always, not everyone is a writer. Not everyone feels that calling too, you know?
I feel like that's okay. Like, I love that you are doing something with your creativity. Like, you're doing this podcast. People get to hear your wonderful voice and hopefully will give you a show on the radio, which pays you all the money. But I think that it's okay to be an actor. I love being, as you can probably tell, I'm obnoxious about all the things that I want to say, and I am very vocal about ideas that I have in a process, and I am more of a collaborative artist. And I've been asked by some people to do choreography and to AD things, and that is something I'm interested in pursuing as well. But I don't think it's bad to just love what you do. Not everybody has to do everything, and that's okay, because when you do find the thing that you're good at, it feels easy. It feels good. Like, mm-hmm. this is for you. So, because my processes of things that I do to unwind are not artistic at all. They are the very, very common comfort things that you do. I like sitting on the couch with my man friend and drinking good wine and watching a Netflix binge. And that is it. And it's not creative at all, but it's a lot of fun. And like, yeah, traveling.
Yeah.
Eating a lot. yeah. I went to school for acting like you did. Mm-hmm. And I am an actor, and that's what I want to do. And I think there is a lot of guilt I feel and like pressure I put on myself to do other things. And I know there are things that I can do and I'm good at. Like, I'm a really good mover and I'm really good with ideas, and I make a really good collaborator and probably a really good AD. And that is something I think I should pursue. But I also feel like you don't have to do everything. You will find the things that you're supposed to do. Like, this podcast for you is a way to be creative and to find an outlet that feels good and that you're doing, and that is what you're supposed to do, and that it'll come as long as you have a hunger and you keep pursuing it. But that doesn't mean that you have to make a movie or write a script or be your own producer. Yeah,
it's an interesting line to walk between, like, wanting to be ambitious and to do everything you possibly can to achieve what you want to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And then also just, like, letting yourself off the hook sometimes.
And then you never know. The right things come out of what you're pursuing that actually is the thing that you want to pursue and not just the thing that you feel like you should be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you made this podcast. I have a friend who was in a place where she didn't know what she was doing with her acting career, and so she just started generating ideas and wrote a really beautiful script. Another, you never know where things can lead. You just have to sort of follow them when they get there. And that means that another friend who was a pianist and hurt her fingers, so she became a singer. She got into musical theater and then became an actor, and now is a producer and a short film director. And I think the trajectory of that is that she has an artistic life and soul and just keeps on moving forward. But that means when she went to the next thing, it was because she was done with what she was doing, or she couldn't do what she was doing in that moment.
How are you feeling about New York City these days? Do you ever think about living somewhere else?
I don't know where else I would live.
I'm just curious. You come from such a specific place that I have never been to, and that I feel like a lot of America has these, like, fantasies about. Like, Hawaii is this, like, dreamland that...
It's all true.
All the TV shows have a special where the Brady Bunch goes to Hawaii or something.
First of all, I'm going to speak for the Hirotas, who would be glad to have you and Frankie. So, well, you should go
careful.
And visit. And you should
that
come.
Might happen.
And you will have to play with a bunch of little people, and
which
they will,
you know,
rule your
love.
World. And they're awesome. But yes, Hawaii is... So whenever I tell people I'm from Hawaii, they always ask me, why did you leave?
Right.
And even if I wasn't going to pursue acting, which I did actually know that I wanted to do since I was a kid, I have wanted to leave Hawaii for a really long time because it's Shangri-La. And that's how I explain it, is that it is paradise. And it is, when there's an energy there that is really calming and is really beautiful, and it is an extraordinary place. But it is a place for people who are quiet inside themselves.
Mm.
And if you have anything inside you that needs to move, that needs to go, that, like, is hungry and needs to pursue, then you have to go, because Shangri-La exists in its little bubble and you stay there. And you can't, if you are going to explode, you're going to burst that bubble. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I left Hawaii because I needed more. And that's what I love about New York. I love that there is so, so much going on, and there's always something weird and funky and interesting to see and do. Like, when we had the show on Saturday night, my man friends had a friend he made down in Antarctica, who came, and they went to some opening night at the Brooklyn Museum that was a carnival themed, and so they had like sideshows and contortionists and there was like funky drinks. And that's what I love about New York, is that there's all these weird things that happen. And like, you invited me to a downtown show where there was a great puppet show and mm-hmm. like a couple of great bands and a guy with a banjo, and there were pole dancers. It's amazing. Like, that doesn't really happen so much in other places.
So you're sticking around for a while.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. And it's so
it
odd.
Sounds like it.
Well, it's odd because, like, it's too expensive here, and it's really hard to live, but it's also really hard to leave, and not just as an artist, just because it's so exciting and it's so fun.
And the energy is addicting.
It is addictive. It's horrible and makes you crazy. There was a moment where I had my Seinfeld moment a few years ago, because I had just been working. I'd been working in a bar, and I got off, and it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. And I went up the street, and I was supposed to catch the crosstown bus, and it was at the corner. So I ran, and the guy was starting to pull away. So I like jumped, and I like jumped like half out in front of the bus in the street. And the bus and the light turned right after that. So the light was red. He was at the corner. The bus driver just looked at me and glared and waited there as I like stood outside trying to beat on the door to get him to open up and let me in. And the light turned and he left. And it was like, and by that point it was like 3, and I was like, I was not having it. So I took off. I ran down the street and I beat him to the next bus stop, and I beat on the door until he opened it, and I came marching inside and I said, "Why did you leave? You saw me there. You didn't open up the door." And he said, "You jumped in front of the bus. What is wrong with you?" And I said, "Who? What's your number? What's your medallion number? I'm going to call your boss." He said, "You're fucking crazy. You jumped in front of the bus." And he said, "I'm going to call your boss. I'm going to report you." And then the lady on the bus said, "If you two both don't shut up, I'm going to call the police on both of you." So I sat down and I rode across the park, and I got off at 2nd Avenue, where I was living at the time. And I called my sister and I said, "Jess, I think I finally lost it. New York has broken me." And she said, "No, you know, you just had your Seinfeld moment. Go take a yoga class, drink some tea, have a cocktail. It'll look better tomorrow." Mm. And yes, this city will drive you crazy, but I love it. I don't know.
I know you mentioned a show earlier that I'm not sure which one you're talking about, but is there anything that you've worked on in the last couple of years, or like a moment you had personally as an artist that you're really proud of that you want to tell me about?
I did a show a couple of years ago with the same company that we're working with now, Antimatter. It was a post-apocalyptic robot play where I played a nanny bot, and it sounds... It sounds crazy, but, and I wasn't originally cast in the part. I went in for it, but I didn't get it. And Adam, who is our friend and who did your tarot card reading, wrote a part for me where I had one scene with my dear friend Casey, and I played his partner. And then the girl who was playing the robot had to drop out because she had some health issues. And so I went into the part with like 2.5 weeks before it opened. And it came together, and it was a really odd moment where I was like racking my brain and trying to learn all this like weird, the half of the dialogue was just numbers and like dots and completely nonsensical. And there was a moment where I was in the process, and I was looking at all these AI actors who played AI in movies, like, Michael Fassbender in the Alien sequel. And he talked about figuring out how to do the part based on the function of the robot, and it was something that keyed in, and I realized, oh, this is a nanny bot. And that was that, and working with Maureen Cialelli on a little bit of movement one day is what keyed me in. And I was really proud of that physical work, because I think that showed me in that moment that I could carry a piece, that I could pull something off in a short amount of time, mm-hmm. and that really like what my strength was, because it was I knew in that physical work that I was doing something pretty unique and special. And that was one moment when I knew, you know, we talked before about the dark side being the doubt that you also have within the process, where I knew that I was doing good work, and I felt it and I knew it, and I knew what I was doing. It was still hard,
right?
And that show kicked the crap out of me, but I knew what I was doing. Yeah, and from that moment on forward, it took a sort of turn in my work. So a lot of grad school is breaking the actor down, mm-hmm. and getting rid of your bad habits so that they can theoretically build you back up, and that may or may not happen. And I think after I did that piece, that's when I started to trust myself as an actor again. And I've liked a lot of things that I've done since then, but it was really that moment, because of so many hurdles that had to be crossed, that I'm really proud of.
Have you seen any shows recently that you want to give a recommendation for?
I haven't seen anything recently because I've been hanging out with you, and I see you every day, and you're wonderful. Let's see. Unfortunately, the last couple of pieces that I've seen, I haven't been able to recommend.
That's okay. So what she's saying is just come see The Tower. We're playing through December 19th at Here Art Center.
The only thing I've seen lately, I saw a couple of short plays, which I didn't love. I saw Allegiance. It was very important for me to see because it's about the Japanese Americans in the war. And like that's where you know, my grandparents were in Hawaii. And mm-hmm. the only reason they didn't intern the Japanese Americans in Hawaii was because it was such a huge portion of the population. It was like
would have like 60, shut down the economy.
Yeah,
basically.
It was like 60% of the population. Like the economy would have shut down, and there was no way really to know. Like they would have rebelled. You couldn't control when there's more of them than there is you. What could they have done? And also because people lost people because Pearl Harbor was there. It would have been an insult to injury that this major devastation just happened, and then they put people into the camps. So my family didn't get put into camps. So this is what I think about the piece Allegiance. I know people that are in it, and I think that they're doing good work. I think that the play is trying to do two things that are not working together. It's trying to accomplish too much in terms of the storytelling, and it's also doing it in a field that is in a genre that's now a little bit hackneyed, because the big classic musical, mm-hmm. which I guess makes sense because it's set in the 40s and that's the guys, is less and less having a place in our particular like Broadway right now.
Right.
You know, I have a friend who's in Dames and Sea, which is your very typical like big tap musical. Mm-hmm. And I think it's probably a fine production. But when you have things like Hamilton and you kind of have like the new generation of work,
right. It's
that's kind of
meant to be nostalgic at this point. What was it like for you to see that particular story told on a Broadway stage?
It was beautiful and moving, and it was important because it's, I think, what makes, especially in the climate of what's going on politically right now, mm-hmm. one of the last things that is a strength of America, as opposed to a lot of our weaknesses, is that these horrible things that we did, we own and we point to. We don't silence it. So, you know, there's been massive genocides and atrocities that happen in other countries that they don't even speak about, but we did this horrible thing and then make a Broadway musical about it because it's an important story to be told, because it was a horrible moment, a shameful moment in mm-hmm. our American history, because a lot of these people were born in America, and the story tells like so many things. Like they were basically they weren't allowed to enlist, and then they were forced to enlist, and they were basically put into much like a lot of the African American soldiers at the time. They were put into battalions of all Asian Americans. So, there was a battalion in World War II called the 442nd, mm-hmm. and it was made up almost exclusively of Japanese Americans. Nope, I think exclusively. And they were sent to the front lines in Italy, and they were basically sent in to do suicide missions because they wanted to show that our boys had loyalty and like American strength. And I had an uncle who was in it. And they did these impossible things, and entire battalions would be wiped out.
Did he survive?
He did.
Oh my goodness.
And you know, the senator who was one of the longest senators up until he passed a year or two ago, Senator Inouye had lost his arm in World War II, and he was in the 442nd, and he carried a lot of clout because of that. But these guys who were in camps in California were given the choice that either you go into a military prison or you go into the 442nd, and that was basically your choice.
If I can give a quick recommendation, I saw I had a friend in from out of town, and he had an extra ticket to see Fiddler on the Roof yesterday.
Oh.
And obviously it's not about American history, but it really was strikingly timely with everything that's going on with the Syrian refugees and all of this crazy political rhetoric about Muslims. And one, it's a beautiful production, and I was going in expecting it to kind of be a little campy and nostalgic because I hadn't seen that show since high school, but it's a beautiful production. And at the end, when they're all loading up their carts and leaving their homes, they've basically been forced to leave just because of who they are. It was completely current and political. It's very interesting. So if you get a chance to see it, I don't think it's open yet, but it's wonderful, and the choreography is amazing.
I love it.
Yeah. Thank you very much for talking with me. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Let's go to a play.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to the Compass Podcast. I'm Leah Walsh. More episodes are coming soon. Please look for us on Facebook and iTunes. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.